and welcome to the program, UFO Warning. Today's topic, a USO sighting off of the USS Nimitz back in 1991. That's correct, this sighting goes clear back to 1991, and it was reportedly sighted from the deck of the USS Nimitz. Now, of course, we know the Nimitz is quite famous for those Tic Tac videos that came out from sightings in 2004. We all know the story about how they were clandestinely released to the New York Times, then to Tom DeLonge's group, to the Academy of Stars, and then finally, in 2019, the Department of Defense owned up to the videos. So the Nimitz seems to have quite a long history of sightings with UFOs and USOs. Now, this particular sighting I found interesting because we have two different interview accounts, and then we have a third investigator's analysis of the witness and of the witness's veracity. And I think it's very important to see how three different people, three different media really look at this thing and what happened. The first account comes from a YouTube channel called Quest TV. I'm not sure who they're owned by. I need to look that up. But it's, you know, it's a very professionally done, very slick done thing, much along the lines of a lot of the stuff that Louis Elizondo is doing. You have the investigators go around, and it's an old idea. I think it was much better done back in the day when the History Channel had the UFO hunters out there. I think they did it that way better than anybody. But I flip on YouTube, I'm looking through some stuff online, and I've come across this, probably about a 7 or 8 minute documentary. Now, just to kind of bring you up to date, the source I said, of course, is from the YouTube channel Quest. The sighting date's 1991. The eyewitness is listed as a man named Kevin Thomas. He was a Navy person on board that ship. He says the object was a USO, that it was a huge black triangle shape, that it was hovering above the water, that it was larger than the Nimitz, and the Nimitz being about, I think they said, 1,000 or 1,100 feet long. And he described this thing as being like the size of three football fields. And he's looking at one edge of the triangle, which is 30, 40, 50 foot tall as it hovers above the water. And he says that it's really not disturbing the water at all below it. And then he discusses how he sat there on the deck of the Nimitz that night and watched this thing hovering there for about a half hour, at which point it just accelerated at 15 to 20 Mach, he estimates, and just darted up into the sky, much like the Tic Tacs moved. That's the basics of it. Now, at the beginning of this video, and this is the first video we're talking about, this is a recent video that came out on YouTube Quest TV. It's this very slick style that you see so often today when we get into what passes for investigative work. You know, we're at least when you watched the fellows on the History Channel, it seemed like you had people that really went out into the field, interviewed people in depth, and spent several days, you know, going over a specific incident. This thing here, it's fun to watch for 7 minutes, but what do you get out of it? I notice, and I want to point out at the beginning of the video, probably the first third or first half of the video just involves these two investigators, so-called, running around aimlessly trying to find this witness. And you have the shaky camera angles, you know, the zoom ins. I have to tell you, there are two people that are the star of the show. This, and I can't even remember their names, but the first, the lady introduces herself to the camera as an astrophysicist. She's probably in her mid-30s, early 40s. And I have to tell you, she single-handedly has the tightest pair of pants I've ever seen on an astrophysicist. You just wonder what's going on here, man. That's an aside. The gentleman is a younger guy who describes himself as a former Marine. So you can kind of see right up front, they are presenting these two authority figures. You have the one person, the woman, she is put into the storyline as this super intelligent person. I mean, if she's an astrophysicist, certainly she knows everything there is to know about UFOs. And then you have the physically fit young guy who's probably late 20s, early 30s maybe, who is a former Marine. So you have super smart lady and hero status for the dude. When the video starts, you see these two people driving around this town of Texas, knocking on doors, and they explain that they're looking for their UFO witness. Well, I'm thinking, why are you driving around the last known address of this guy knocking on doors? I mean, if you found his last known address, wouldn't it be likely that you could find his current address? I mean, this is a pretty upscale production. There's a lot of money behind this little 7-minute documentary, no doubt about it. You would have thought that they could have hired somebody to do, I don't know, a 10-minute online search. So they kind of start off, in my mind, with what is a false premise, and that is that the USO eyewitness, that the eyewitness, if for some reason, is afraid to come forward. So they're creating that dramatic tension. This is kind of the exact opposite of what we should be looking for, I think, when we're trying to investigate a UFO case. I mean, do we really need to spend half of a 7-minute video watching people drive around knocking frantically on doors to find the witness? Finally, they get a house. They find the place that this witness, Kevin Thomas, had lived in. They talk to the former owner. He doesn't know anything. He sends them somewhere else or whatever, however it happens. They finally find a young guy who says, oh, yeah, I think he's living, I believe it's in Bonham, Texas. So then we see the obligatory drone shot of them driving along the highway in the pickup truck together. They show up at the witness's door. Now, you know, this is not Frank and Mike on American Pickers, where at least they get a call from the office girl telling them that, hey, we're going to have Frank and Mike there with a camera crew to look at your junk they want to buy. This is just two people supposedly cold calling this guy. And, you know, he looks a little surprised, but you got to wonder, I mean, is it even feasible that these people showed up at his door? I mean, wouldn't your first question be, hey, what's the camera for? But nonetheless, I show up at this guy's house. By the way, a very nice house. And the first thing out of the astrophysicist's mouth, it's almost laughable. Kevin says, how did you find me? You know, more dramatic effect. And she says, well, we're investigators and we're really good at our job. I don't know. You're trying to find somebody and your way to find them is to drive around the last town that you thought they lived in and knock on random doors? I mean, most people today have a smartphone. I think I would have just picked up the smartphone and started typing in the guy's name. You could have probably found him. Well, there's a little back and forth, and the second investigator, the Marine, he lets this rattled eyewitness know that he was a Marine. Well, that's the bonding point. So they come in the door, and Mr. Thomas gives them about a 2-minute rundown of what he saw. He explains that. He tells them that he was in charge of the photo lab for the enlisted people on the ship. And he doesn't really get too much into his job detail other than to say that he liked to go out on the deck of the aircraft carrier after his shift was done. He explains that apparently there was some moonlight out that night, but it was pretty dark, and he liked to go out there and watch the dolphins and whatnot. Okay, whatever. And then he says that while he was on deck, by himself, out just all alone out here on the aircraft carrier, that the ship went into what they call a darkness exercise or darkness mode. And I guess that's, or they call it darkened ship, I guess is the actual term for it. And that's the situation where all the lights go out on the ship and it's a way to hide from the enemy. Well, he finds out that he's stuck out on the deck. He's out there by himself in the dark. And that's when he happens to see this giant triangle-shaped UFO the size of 3 football fields. And it's hovering there about 30 foot off the water, I think he said. And the UFO itself has a height of 30, 40, 50 feet, something in that range. He thinks it's a couple hundred yards away from where he's at. So that's, you know, that's a pretty good distance. And he just describes how it just hovers there for about a half hour or so while he's on the deck. And then just before the ship comes back to being lit up, this thing just zooms off into the space, basically. Pretty fascinating description. He said he didn't see any lights on the ship. He didn't see any aliens. He seems pretty sincere when you watch the video. And like I said, you can link. I have links to the video posted at ufowarning.com. You can go there and link directly to both of these interviews that we're talking about. So the eyewitness account did seem plausible. I mean, he seemed like a real person. He didn't seem, you know, he didn't seem like he was trying to make something up. His story seemed sincere. So I was a little bit, annoyed that half of the 7-minute video focused on these two investigators, quote unquote, driving around in a pickup truck, knocking on doors, looking for this guy, when they could have just spent the whole 7 minutes talking to the guy. And that's a problem that I have with most of these short little documentaries that we find on YouTube or even on, like, you know, Discovery Channel or History Channel. Now, they leave out a lot of details. A lot of it is just focused on camera work, on building drama. It's all an emotional thing, and we're not really getting to the facts most of the time. Entertaining? Yes. Informative? Well, maybe not so much. Well, in the interview, Mr. Thomas says that he never really came forward until the Tic Tac videos came out. Now, he didn't say, I've never talked about this, I've never mentioned it. He just said, I never really talked about it. So he kind of qualifies his response. So the feeling that you get from the whole little 7-minute documentary is that we have a eyewitness that saw a extremely enormous UFO. He was very shaken by it, and he never wanted to talk about it. Important to point out here that after the video, after the ship went from darkened mode to a normal mode, the door that he needed to get through to get back, you know, into the ship opened. He was questioned about what he was doing on deck. The next day, a couple of uniformed investigators showed up, had a relatively long interrogation with him, and during that time, he declined to reveal that he'd seen a UFO because he felt like maybe he wasn't supposed to see it. Seems like he felt threatened, whatever. I can understand all that. So after all this happens, back in 1991, so what we were presented with is a eyewitness, a military eyewitness of a UFO, who feels like he saw something he shouldn't have seen, and as a result has decided not to talk about it. He says, I never really talked about it after that. But now all of a sudden the Tic Tac UFO comes out in 2017, and then it is basically owned up to by the DOD in 2019, and now all of a sudden he feels relieved enough and safe enough where he can talk about it a little bit, but he's still presented as somebody who is basically trying to live off the grid. Okay, that's the bio of this guy, but there's a couple problems with it. First off, he did talk about it. He talked about it at a UFO conference back in 2015, and I found that video with a little... It wasn't super hard to find, but there was a little bit of trouble finding it because in that video, you can clearly see it's the same guy, but he goes by the name of Kevin Thomas Villa. So for some reason, he's using this third name, Villa. Anyway, it's about a 20-minute video with a MUFON investigator or interviewer, I guess you would say, young gal, and she does a very good, very supportive interview that lasts about 20 minutes. I repeat, this is in 2015. The Quest video just came out, I don't know, maybe a few weeks ago. So we have a 5-year period there. So he said that he, quote, never really talked about it. Well, he did talk about it. I don't know if you would call that really talking about it. But he explains in this MUFON interview, which is actually a much more thorough, and in my opinion, a much better interview than what we get from this little 3 minutes on the Quest video. He explains what happened, how he saw the UFO. He gives just a tad bit more detail about how there really weren't lights on it, but apparently when he was observing the UFO, it appeared that the coloration on the side that he saw, there seems like there was some gradation in the color of it. Maybe there were like columns to it, not really light so much. But he still just has the same basic description of this giant triangle. And you can go to ufowarning.com and you can watch that MUFON video from the link right there. It's about 20 minutes. Now, he goes into a lot of detail, though, on how he was personally affected by it. He goes into, basically, he felt a little traumatized when he shared this experience with people back home. Apparently, he talked to his mom about it. He said he'd been raised a single kid. He talked to people in his church about it. And he goes into quite a bit of detail about how he felt like people were kind of freaked out about it, how people treated him differently. And he goes into this whole description of how he felt, and really a lot of negativity around it. And you can watch the video and just, you know, see how he describes that. He basically had what he pretty much described as a crisis of faith. Sometimes people do have this reaction when they see these UFOs. They're not able to really comprehend how the phenomena of UFOs can exist in the same place where their religious beliefs exist at. Kind of like they have a hard time living with these two things that seem to be quite true to them. Some people have a lot more of a need to explain things than other people. Some of us just happen to see one of these things and we're just like, wow, that was interesting. I'm not sure what it was. And then maybe we go on our own quest to find out what it is or just to speculate. Other people seem to see these things and they get really, they experience a lot of cognitive dissonance over it. Somehow they have in their own mind that in a place that they see the world as, you know, from their religious perspective or their belief in God or whatever, there's no room for UFOs for whatever reason. And so they have a kind of a very strict view of the world, a very uncompromising view of the world, and they have a need to explain everything. And sometimes that can get you in trouble because there's a lot of things that we can't understand in life. And if we sit there and we try to explain everything that pops up in our paradigm with the tools that we have available to us, things can get pretty freaky for us. On the other hand, if we just go through life and accept that there are certain things that we don't understand, but we just have to be able to compartmentalize things sometimes and not get too preoccupied with trying to explain this thing. I mean, that's my suggestion. If a person has a UFO encounter or UFO sighting, it's kind of like the old Eagles song, "Don't let the sound of your own wheels drive you crazy." I mean, sometimes we just have to see these things. Things happen in life that we can't explain. And there's no reason to lose your religion over it. There's no reason to lose your mind over it. I mean, it's okay to be comfortable with things that we can't explain, I think. And this guy seemed to be really uncomfortable with something that he'd seen that he couldn't explain. And that's kind of what made me feel like his account was genuine. Even though there were some things that he said that were, I had questions, like the whole point about him saying that he hadn't really talked about this before. And maybe that's part of the editing. And that brings up another point that I've talked about before. Ever since these Tic Tac videos came out, it seems like they've had such an impact, on the zeitgeist of the UFO phenomena that every slickly done broadcast that concerns UFOs, every article that's pumped out by one of these writers who no doubt is, you know, working from home, producing as many words as they can to get paid for. And basically, they're just creating content to get paid. And they don't really care how good that content is. Well, the easiest thing in the world to do is to cut and paste the Tic Tac story. And it, quite frankly, it gets extremely tiresome to see this stuff come up in almost every single UFO article or documentary that comes across the internet. And I'm sure you've noticed this. You can't pick up an You can't click onto a UFO article anymore, a mainline news article, without seeing a video still from the Tic Tac video and having that same, you know, three or four paragraphs tossed in there. They use it as filler, and they use it as a way to add authority or to make a connection with the audience. And this is what Quest has done here. They've taken this sighting that happened aboard the Nimitz, even though it was over, I believe he said it was south of the Philippines and north of the Carolinas, or the opposite way. But it's off in the Pacific. They were on their way back from actually the first Iraq War theater. So this was, 13 years before the second sighting. But even though you're halfway across the world, they still want to use that Tic Tac video, that account of those pilots, which now has been validated. See, here you go, there, this appeal to authority. It's been validated by the Department of Defense. So it must be true. So you see this happening over and over again. No matter how remotely connected, they want to bring up that 2004 encounter and tie that into whatever they're talking about. And this can be a little bit of a problem because it really sometimes can stretch the narrative out and make it a little bit less clear what we're talking about. So that's just kind of the difference that I saw between the two interviews. The first interview was your typical slick production stuff, a little silly, actually. People going around knocking on doors to find somebody and then introducing themselves as investigators who are, quote, really good at their jobs. Well, if you were really good at your job, you wouldn't have to get in your car and drive around looking for somebody. You would probably find everything you need to know online and whatever database you needed to search. That part was silliness. And then, you find this guy who is supposedly, trying to live off the grid because he's worried about coming forward about the sighting. Well, if he was that worried, then why did he do a 20-minute interview and an appearance at a MUFON conference back in 2015? Those are some questions that need to be answered. As I said, the MUFON interview, I thought, was actually a far better interview, just done by this gal from MUFON, in front of a camera with a microphone, compared to what we're given through Quest, this typical online documentary today, which is just a slickly produced little 7-minute video straight out of Hollywood. Now, the third perspective that I want to look at this very quickly, and I won't go into it too far because it's a very detailed article. And the article came out October 10th, 2018, and the website is UFOJoe.net. And I also have a link there at the website, UFOWarning.com. Now, of course, this article came out before the recent Quest documentary, but about 3 years after the MUFON interview. And it says, military photographer Kevin Villa. So here we have the third name used. We have three different names being used. Kevin Thomas Villa, and Kevin Villa. It says, military photographer Kevin Villa allegedly saw an unidentified submerged object, USO, while he was aboard the USS Nimitz. Now, I just want to point out that in the Quest documentary, they presented him as somebody who simply ran the photo lab for the enlisted people aboard the Nimitz. But during the MUFON interview, you find out that he had like 18 accommodations from different admirals, and that he had had, of course, exemplary reviews until the UFO sighting, at which point his reviews went downhill and he was eventually discharged, I think he said with a disability, from the Navy. So he also goes into great detail about the times that he was a combat photographer, that he had been on the scene when George Bush had his infamous food poisoning incident in Japan. And he talks a lot more about what he did, and it seemed like he was doing a lot more than simply running the photo lab for the enlisted folks. Now, it goes on here, it says, okay, military photographer Kevin Villa allegedly saw an unidentified submerged object while he was aboard the USS Nimitz. He was interviewed about it at the MUFON Symposium back in 2015 by Erica Lukes, and recently video of that interview surfaced again on the Facebook group I belong to. Now, that's the video that I was talking about that I have a link posted to at the UFOWarning.com site. It says, on first listen, he sounded credible to me, But then I checked back with the group and saw a few posts from researcher Christoph Spitzer. Now I'm not so sure. In a perfect world, Kevin would clarify some of the issues that Christopher brought up. The main reason I wanted to post this was to show people the level of detail some researchers get into when trying to vet a case. Christoph is one of the best, and below are his Facebook posts edited very lightly for me for clarity. Thanks for him allowing me to post his comments here. Now, I'm not going to get into all these comments. You can go online and you can link to this article. But basically what happened was, in 2015, Kevin Thomas Villa came out with MUFON, and he gave this extensive interview and described the sighting in detail. So what happened was, people began to listen to this, and just members of the community, in particular this Christoph Spitzer, started to try to reconstruct the sighting. They actually got pictures of the USS Nimitz, people that had been in the Navy, people that had been on board that ship, and they tried to more or less do a 3D simulation of what happened. And they get into a lot of detail about whether or not it would have even been possible to see the UFO from his vantage point. They get into questions about whether or not it would have been possible for somebody to have been locked outside on deck of the ship during one of these darkened ship exercises. They get into whether or not the gangplank that he referred to would have been where he said it was. So this article goes on for quite a bit in depth and really allows you to look at the sighting, imagine what it would have been like on the deck of that ship back in 1991 out in the middle of the Pacific, and whether or not Kevin or anybody else could have been in the place he said he was and actually seen anything, let alone a USO. And they don't really come to any hard, fast conclusions. It seems to me that this article kind of errs a little bit on the side of caution, and it calls into question some things and says basically that there's some questions that need to be answered by Kevin in order for people to understand whether or not it would have been possible for him to have found himself in that situation to begin with. You know, what are the chances that he could have even seen dolphins off that deck at night? What was the weather like? You know, what was the phase of the moon like? Do we have an exact date of when this happened? So it takes a much more scientific, clinical approach to the eyewitness account. And that's what has to be done if we're ever going to take the UFO phenomena investigation to the next level. What I see personally, what I find happening so much today, and I think a lot of this, it goes back to the whole situation with DeLong and the To the Stars Academy, where the whole thing is, there's so much focus on media and controlling the narrative. When you have so-called experts in the field that will not be truthful with people about their role in the release of classified material or whether or not that material was classified. When you have people in charge of these big UFO groups that just want to spoon-feed you what they want to spoon-feed you. And when you watch these very slickly produced little documentaries, 5, 10, 20 minutes long on YouTube or TV or whatever, they are hardly ever do they take a very scientific approach to the physical events that surrounded the sighting. This person's here. Could they see it from this angle? Now, that's something that the UFO hunters from the History Channel used to do. That series that was out about, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years ago. They would send the three guys out, and they would literally go to the UFO sighting, and they would stand where the witness was. They would measure the angles, the distance, and they would try to recreate the actual sighting circumstances to determine whether or not a sighting would have even been possible. And when investigators do that kind of work, just like this Christopher Spitzer has done, when they do the kind of work where they recreate the place where the sighting happened, then it adds so much to it. Just like when I had my sighting, I called MUFON, and the first thing the fellow asked me was how big it was. And then what we realized was is that when I saw this thing, it must have been one of these, it seemed like it got larger, you know, the size that as the sighting progressed over that half a minute or so, this thing was filling up the space that it was in. This is something we see commonly in these things. Some people call them shapeshifters, where the UFOs that we see might seem a little, they seem to change size and shape as the sighting progresses. So by just talking to the investigator and estimating, you know, what this thing looked like in my case, you know, I had an initial estimate of the size of the craft, but then when I explained to him that, you know, how it kind of filled up the medium of the highway, he's like, well, listen, that's way bigger than what you're describing to me. And, you know, by going through and actually analyzing what we saw and just being open and honest and transparent about it, we can begin to identify the type of craft we saw. Did we see a craft or did we see a phenomena? So like with this fellow here, with Mr. Thomas Villa, if we could actually recreate an idea of what he saw, where he was at on that ship, and what he would have been able to see, then we can determine things like, well, was this craft that he saw, was it an actual mechanical craft, or could this have been one of these situations where this thing is more or less a phenomena, and the size that he perceives could be different from one point to the next? So what do we, and that lets us know what we're dealing with. And so the problem that I had with both interviews, actually, was that we lacked this clinical analysis of the sighting itself. And by doing that, you open yourself up to a lot of doubt, a lot of scrutiny, and it's not as helpful as far as creating a body of knowledge about what these things are and how they act. So that was just, I thought, interesting, because there were three different perspectives. The first perspective is just this very slickly produced, you know, for-profit little video that pops up on YouTube. It's well done, a lot of good camera work, probably cost a lot of money to make that video, but you don't learn much from it. You learn a little bit about the witness, not much. You hear what they say they saw, and that's pretty much it. And then the second video, a much longer video, the production quality on it wasn't nearly as slick, but you did seem like you got a lot more introspection into the witness. You got a lot into what the witness felt. You have a lot more emotional content, but we still didn't have a really scientifically critical analysis of where they were at on that ship when they saw it. So from a third perspective, this person doesn't really care about what the guy felt when he saw it. He's not even looking so much at the sighting itself. He's just looking at the exact location of where the witness claims to have been on that ship. And then he's going around and he's gathering all of the knowledge he can find about the ship, basically trying to build a diagram of that ship, and then putting that person there in a 3D position and then recreating that scene. It's just like they did on the old UFO hunters show back in the day, and just measuring out the angles and saying, well, could he have seen around the aircraft carrier's island, they call it, the command control, the tower there? Would he have been able to see around that from where he was at? Would he have been able to have even been in the place he says he was at the time he says he was? So they're going through and they're recreating that eyewitness scene to determine if it was possible to see anything. And then once we determine that, then we can begin to understand what he saw. Three different perspectives, three completely different results. Like I said, all the links are there at theufowarning.com. Until next time, this is UFO Warning over and out.